Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of WIPN Radio, the International Wine Professional Network radio show. Today, we're going to do something a little unusual. My guest host today is my co-host, Bob Lipinski. Bob, say hi. Sorry about that. Bob, say hi.
Hello, everybody. I hope you're having a great day as I am. I have a glass of whiskey in front of me, and today is going to be a great day.
Well, as you all know, this is a compatible, complementary effort with our International Wine Professional Network. We'll tell you a little bit more about that at the end of the show. Again, my name is Mark Norman. I am a wine business specialist. I've taught classes on internet marketing. I've done work around the world. And together with my business partner, Bob Lipinski, we're moving the yardstick forward, creating a unique community for wine professionals and wine passionate people. In today's digitally transformed consumer, we believe that there needs to be a new effort going forward. Bob, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
I'm the author of 10 books on alcoholic beverages and food, and more than about 500 published articles. I'm also a professional speaker, and like you, Mark, I've given seminars and workshops all over the world. I even had an opportunity years back to conduct training seminars at the White House in Washington, D.C. for the executive waitstaff that covered sensory evaluation, pairing wine with food. It was quite an experience. And in addition to that, I've held executive-level sales, training, and marketing positions in the alcoholic beverage industry. And I'm also a winemaker and grape grower.
Not a bad combination at all. Well, folks, today's episode is going to focus on one of the books that Bob has written, 101, Everything You Need to Know About Whiskey. So my first question, Bob, for you is, what made you decide to write a book about whiskey?
Mark, over the years, I couldn't find a book that covered the basics of whiskey or whiskey basics. You know, a sort of primer. Maybe introduction, if you prefer. And often during presentations to the beverage industry, salespeople or managers, or even consumers, I've been often asked, where can I find a book to learn more about whiskey? Or I'm beginning to learn about whiskey, where can I learn more? Or as a salesperson, all of a sudden now selling whiskey, where do I learn the basics? And I said to myself, finally, I can't find one, so why don't I write a book called 101, Everything You Need to Know About Whiskey?
Well, that's interesting because I kind of, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, when I was starting to promote the show, said something to the effect of, oh, yeah, you walk into a bar, you sit down, you order a shot, and you lean your head back and you down the whiskey. But that's not really the way it should be. If you're really drinking good whiskey, it's entirely different. And I think this is a great topic. Can you tell our listeners about some of the topics contained in your book, you know, now that we're on the subject?
Certainly, Mark. Some of the things we covered are the history of distilled spirits. Not covered as a timeline. We know the first documentation of distilled spirits goes back to 800 B.C. in China, where a distilled spirit, crude although it was made from rice. And over the centuries and over the decades, going into A.D., we've been able to trace when whiskeys were first produced. We know, for example, in Poland back in the 1200s, and also Russia for that matter, vodka was first introduced. Now, not the same vodka as we're drinking today, It was a very crude spirit, but nevertheless, vodka was produced. And Mark, as an interesting side note, I listen to many people in the industry, and I read many, many publications, as you do, and the hot thing people talk about are flavors. Flavored rum, flavored whiskey, God knows how many flavors of vodka. I've lost count of this. I come up with 89 different flavors of vodka, and I know that it's much more than that. And
wow.
We're talking about it's a new phenomenon. But actually, flavored vodkas go back to the 1200s and 1300s. Because back then, that spirit was so crude, so rough, and so harsh, the only way to make it palatable was by adding fruit and or herbs to it. So which fruits and which herbs were added? Whatever they had in the cupboard, whatever was growing in the field, whatever was growing in the orchards. So sometimes you had plums and you had grapes and you had other areas. In fact, perhaps too far north to grow grapes in Scotland and Russia. So in situations like that, they use different herbs, they use different grains. So this kind of flavored, you know, okay, we're using flavors that didn't exist back then, but nevertheless, it's not a recent phenomenon. It's just a change. Please.
Well, I mean, that's you can see them almost beginning to grab, you know, from the way you're describing it, any berry or any tasting additive. But besides bourbon, scotch, rye, Canadian, and Irish whiskey, are whiskey made in other countries?
Well, absolutely, Mark. And we know, in addition to, as I mentioned, bourbon and Canadian, and you mentioned the, I believe you said rye and Irish whiskey, one of the American whiskeys we talk about is American blended whiskey. And one of the flavors, I'm sorry, one of the brands of American flavored whiskey would be Seagram 7. And Seagram 7 has been around since probably right after Prohibition, and it's often referred to as rye whiskey, but in fact, it's not. And other brands of American blended whiskey would be Old Carstairs and Philadelphia, and let's say Four Roses would be another example. So that's been around. In addition to that, corn whiskey. And I realize that many people refer to corn whiskey as moonshine, but it's not moonshine. There is moonshine, and moonshine is more of an illicit illicit beverage, so that's not moonshine. Also is Japanese whiskey. And Japanese whiskey was first made back in 1924. And although we don't really think about Japan as a whiskey-producing country, it nevertheless is, and some of the top whiskeys, as a matter of fact, last year or the year before, a Japanese single malt whiskey won the top honors worldwide as the best whiskey in the world.
Wow. I bet you that turned some heads.
Yeah. And let's not forget our Tennessee whiskey, which is Jack Daniel's, which is the leader. And also George Dickel, and many other whiskeys now produced in the state of Tennessee. Mark, you asked earlier, whiskeys being produced globally. I have a brief list, and I'll just very quickly mention some of the countries that produce whiskey: Australia, Belgium, Bulgaria, the Czech Republic, Denmark. How about this one, Mark? Dominican Republic. We think about rum all the time.
Sure.
In Finland, France, our cognac and wine producing, South Africa, India, Switzerland, Syria, Thailand. Actually, Thailand produces some pretty good whiskey, and many others, including Turkey and Wales. So it is produced in many countries.
I know there's a renewed interest, especially here in the United States, but, I mean, I'm in the heart of wine country, but about 30 miles south of where I live in Central Virginia, somebody just recently opened a business called the Virginia Distillery, and they actually brought over two 10,000-gallon copper pots to make single malt whiskey here in Virginia. And I got to tell you, it's pretty hard to go almost any place without running into somebody who's making, you know, what you before referred to as moonshine. But there are all kinds of craft distilleries popping up, trying to put their own twist on it, if you will. Obviously, you know, you mentioned about all these topics, and you've mentioned all the different kinds of whiskeys and the countries. Tell us about how you researched the material for your book. Obviously, you've learned an awful lot about it.
Well, Mark, over the years, I've visited dozens of distilleries in the U.S., Canada, Scotland, and Ireland. And, you know, one of the ways you learn is by listening. And I've always believed that you cannot learn by speaking. You can only learn by listening. And I asked many, many questions of distillers, master distillers. And some of the questions were, I guess, a little rather dumb back then. I still ask dumb questions, probably not as many, though. And I asked distillers questions. I read as many books as I possibly could on the subject. I attended many, many seminars and workshops all over the U.S., Canada, and in the U.K., trying to learn more. And let's not forget, plenty of tastings. You can read as much as you want.
Poor man.
Well, you can't learn about wine unless you know you have a corkscrew and a glass. So a combination of that. And in addition, as my role as vice president, national director of training at Brown-Forman, as well as Southern Wine and Spirits and other companies, I had the great opportunity to taste and conduct seminars on every distilled spirit in their portfolio. So it's a great opportunity. And, you know, one of the great ways to learn the subject is to teach a subject. So after so many years of tastings and visitations and reading and asking, it was just time to write the book.
Well, I mean, it certainly sounds like, you know, you've got an extensive background and a tremendous knowledge of it. Now, I know this book was recently revised. You published it last year and then very quickly revised it. Can you tell us about that and why the revisions?
Well, the book initially came out July of last year, 2015. And we went through the first printing very, very quickly. Well, towards the end of last year, 2015, and months after the publication, the EU, or the European Union, in its wisdom, made sweeping changes to both Scotch and Irish whiskey regulations and labeling. Sweeping changes. Certain categories were eliminated, certain new categories added, labels were changed. Canada also saw fit to nationalize some regulations regarding Canadian whiskey. Along with our Japanese whiskey distillers, they also decided to make changes in line with the EU, even though Japan is not part of the EU. In the U.S., our own government, or the former BATF, now called Alcohol, Tobacco, and Tax and Trade Bureau, they decided to reinterpret, as I put it, regulation regarding the grain mixture, the definition of bourbon, straight bourbon whiskey, as well as rye whiskey, American blended whiskey. So they decided to reinterpret what they were. And one of the biggest areas of reinterpretation concerned flavored whiskey and whiskey liqueurs. And this was done due to the influx of colors and flavors. After looking at the number of changes, I decided that the only way to do that was to completely rewrite the book. And while I decided to completely rewrite the book, I had many requests from readers. And one request was, Bob, you know, you list all these wonderful cocktails. You list the history, the derivation, the background of these cocktails, but you don't list the ingredients or how to make it. And I said, okay, after about a dozen requests, I said to myself, let me start putting that. So I took all the classic and popular cocktails made with whiskey as the base and added all the ingredients. Then I said, all right, the other category was I had American presidents listed, and I had some of the cocktails of some of the American presidents, and I decided to list every single president from Abraham Lincoln to former President George W. Bush, exactly what they drank. I don't have the current president because I wouldn't write about the current president until they physically leave office. So when the current president leaves office next year, if I decide to update the book, then the president then becomes the latest one. And in addition to that, famous people, many requests, what are the drinks of some famous people? And I decided, like Alfred Hitchcock, for example, and Ernest Hemingway and Sinatra, and Humphrey Bogart, Ian Fleming from James Bond, and even J.K. Rowling from Harry Potter. So that was just added in. And I greatly enhanced the section on prohibition, moonshine, and related terms, you know, like bathtub gin and bootlegger. I added whiskey service and mixers. In addition to that, I added famous bars and saloons and taverns where the Declaration of Independence was signed. Perhaps George Washington made his farewell speech before crossing the Delaware. And even the bars visited by Paul Revere on his famous night of riding. So that dramatically enhanced the book. I wouldn't say double, but it was pretty close to doubling the number of pages in the book. So that was something I planned to do, but it's something which surely needed, and now it's out, and it's up for sale.
And I have read through, and it is really fantastic. Some of the things that you were mentioning, again, in this area, I think you could, without a lot of trouble, do a lot of research, especially in terms of tasting some unique products. But besides this book, how many others have you written?
Well, I've written a total of 10 books on alcoholic beverages and food. And some of the other titles are Italian Wine and Cheese Made Simple. There was a pairing that over the years people had asked me, is there any books on pairing cheese and wine? And I looked and I saw a few, and I looked at them, and they were just long paragraphs and reading and pages upon pages. And until I finally got to the point of which cheese and which wine work together, it took me several pages of reading. And I said, I don't have that much time in my life to do that much reading. Where can I find a book that talks about the cheese and wine? Give me a little background on the cheese. Give me a little background on the wine. And give me some pairings. And that's how I decided to write The Italian Wine and Cheese Made Simple. Another book is International Beverage Dictionary, which covers about 8,000 international terms, slang and beverage labels and history and jargon and so forth. There's no brand names in that book. And a companion series to the 101 Whiskey is 101 Everything You Need to Know About Vodka, Gin, Rum, and Tequila. And that came out December 2015. And it's pretty much the same format as the whiskey book, except that it covers all the white goods or the clear spirits, so to speak. And there's subcategories like schnapps and Nezcal and Geneva, which are also covered in addition to the vodka, gin, rum, and tequila.
It gives a lot of material for people to read, and I've gone through a number of them, and they're really interesting. Regarding whiskeys right now, what are the hottest categories?
Well, at this point, rye whiskey, I'm not going to say it's the hottest, but there really isn't one hottest. Rye whiskey, though, is very hot right now. And it's interesting that 10 to 15 years ago, there was little or no interest in rye whiskey. And all of a sudden, little by little, the interest started growing among the younger generation. And they started asking for additional brands of rye and older rye whiskeys. Well, that sounds great, except that distillers over the years realized the decline in consumption of rye whiskey, and they started distilling less and less and started aging less and less. So when everybody all of a sudden said, hey, I want some well-aged rye whiskey, the distillers said, we don't have any because we've not been putting away stock of aged whiskey, so we don't have very many old rye whiskeys. And for the last probably 10 years, the demand has stripped supply. More distilleries now are putting up more barrels of rye, but you can't have a 10-year-old rye whiskey unless it's been aged for 10 years. So you need to, if you put it in today, that barrel is not going to be available for 10 years. And that's one of the issues with rye. Irish whiskey. Even though we think about St. Patrick's Day only, Irish whiskey, especially the brand from Jameson, is growing in double digits each and every year. It's a major, major. The company Brown-Forman of Jack Daniels, they just purchased property in Ireland. They're building a distillery. It's that important as far as Irish whiskey is concerned. Bourbon whiskey. I've never seen so many bourbon whiskeys on the market as I've seen within the last 2 to 3 years. And Mark, you know, bourbon whiskey, although 95% is produced in Kentucky, bourbon can be produced in any one of our states. Any of the 50 states, bourbon whiskey can be produced. And bourbon whiskey, the types and styles of bourbon, it's just unbelievable right now. And there's also quite a bit of an interest in high-end high-end Japanese whiskey. And especially, as I mentioned, after it received the awards as the top whiskey in the world, it automatically just came on fire. And I mentioned a few minutes ago, whiskey can be produced anywhere in the U.S. Well, as of the printing of my book, bourbon was produced in 45 states. It's not currently produced in Hawaii or Louisiana, Rhode Island, South Dakota, or Tennessee. But surprisingly, there is some bourbon produced in Alaska. I guess for the night.
Yeah, I guess they want to do that to keep warm. And as I said, around here, you'd have to be almost blind not to be able to bump into a producer. A lot of interest in craft products. I mean, I think that kind of also parallels what's going on in the wine world. People want something different. They want something unique. You know, I think as you look at a lot of the wine drinkers, they don't want to taste the same wine every night. Well, you would have to imagine for somebody who is a serious whiskey drinker, you know, having the same taste every night, day after day, week after week, can probably get a little bit boring. So you've got to think that it's something that is changing, and people would prefer, you know, understanding. You know, you talked about so many different kinds of products, so many different origins. How do you know what, and you know, if you are a whiskey drinker and you really embrace it, it's a very rare circumstance. I know New York City has a big whiskey tasting event once a year that I'm aware of, but where you can go into many small wine shops, and on the weekends they'll, you know, have three or four or five wines for people to taste. They don't generally do that with whiskey. So, you know, I think it's important if you want to experiment, how, you know, to learn about it. And I think a great opportunity is to pick up a copy of your book and read it. You know, we're getting towards the end of the show, if I may. Can you tell the audience, where can our listeners purchase a copy of 101, Everything You Need to Know About Whiskey?
Well, Mark, the book is currently available on Amazon.com, along with my other books I've written over the years, Barnes & Noble, and many other online bookstores throughout the world. The book is currently selling, besides the U.S. and the U.K., we had an online distributor just pick it up in Malaysia, and we had another one pick it up in Australia and New Zealand, and right now we understand another online distributor is looking for it in Taiwan. I'm not certain that the book is going to be translated into Asian languages at this point, but there's quite a bit of interest in whiskey, and I just wanted to touch on one thing, Mark, as far as the whiskeys, the book itself, is I wrote this book as I started thinking about this as when I was a college professor, because you also were a college professor, and for many years, the term intro courses were usually called 101 or an introductory class. And The second part of the title of the book is Everything You Need to Know About Whiskey, conveys my thoughts about what would be covered in a class called 101 Introduction to Whiskey. So if I was a consumer and I was going to take a class called 101 Introduction to Whiskey, and I said, let me put in this book what I would put in the introductory class that people could take, and here is the accompanying text. So it's not the book, the audience is not written for the extremely knowledgeable person on whiskey, although they can learn quite a bit from the book. It's for interested consumers or people who are just beginning to discover whiskey, and maybe were drinking vodka, wine, or even soft drinks previously. And, you know, Mark, not everyone wants to read large technical books about whiskey that cost $50 or more. It's beyond their reach and, honestly, their interest level. And this book is a primer, 101, everything you just need to know about whiskey, pure, plain, and simple.
Well, that's been a great show that we've put together for everybody. I hope all the people who have and will listen to it will get a lot out of the material that's been included, and open some eyes and open some doors for new tasting opportunities for people. As we started the show, one of the things that I'd like to close with is to invite all our listeners to come visit. You don't have to come join if you don't want, but please come check out the International Wine Professional Network. We're about to upgrade and include many new features. You can find that site at www.internationalwineprofessionals.net. I thank you very much for listening. Bob, why don't you say goodbye to the audience and give them a last pitch about your book?
Thank you. One of the things I've always learned, if you want to learn more about whiskey, get a bottle, get a tumbler, get some ice, pour it in the tumbler. Let it chill for a couple seconds, and drink it down. So, therefore, I thank you for listening. If you have a chance, 101, Everything You Need to Know About Whiskey. If you don't remember the entire title, just look up Bob Lipinski on Amazon, and you'll see the book. Thank you.
That's Lipinski for those who would like to follow Bob's last set of instructions. So from both Bob and I, we thank the audience and look forward to our next show, and which we'll make an announcement on very shortly. Goodbye, everyone.